Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Tomorrow, Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam will hold a special session of the state's General Assembly to tackle gun control legislation. It comes in response to the May 31st shooting at a municipal building that killed 12 people in Virginia Beach. The Democratic governor says the time has come for change.
I will be asking for votes and laws, not thoughts and prayers.
This hour on Point, the debate over guns in Virginia and across the country. You can join us as the time come for a fresh look at gun laws. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. Governor Northam will be with us later this hour. But first, we turn to Richmond, Virginia, where Ben Pavier is. He's the politics reporter from member station WCVE. Ben, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Great to be here.
So I want to play this clip. Here is Virginia Governor Ralph Northam announcing at a press conference last month that he does indeed plan to convene a special session that starts tomorrow of the Virginia General Assembly in hopes of passing gun control legislation.
I will summon the members of the Senate and the House of Delegates to meet in special session for the purpose of passing common sense public safety laws. Business as usual, with leadership shielding most of their members from taking tough votes by setting early morning hearings before small subcommittees, won't cut it. Virginians deserve leadership, and they will be watching. The nation will be watching.
Ben Pavier, the governor, is saying their business as usual will end. What is he proposing exactly?
Jane, he wants to take a step back after Virginia Beach and pass some what he calls common sense gun control measures. So these are things he and the Democrats have proposed before, year after year, and they've been shot down, as he said, in committee in the General Assembly. So he's saying, you know, there's sort of a moral imperative after the Virginia Beach shooting to take action.
So he's saying these early morning hearings before small subcommittees didn't yield many results.
No. So there's a tradition for over a decade, at least. The General Assembly has been controlled by Republicans for the most part for most of that period. And whenever a gun control bill comes up, it's often heard at 7:30 a.m. in a small committee room in January. And so and for a long time, those votes weren't even recorded. So, what basically happened is a small group of Republican lawmakers who control that committee were able to quash those bills pretty quietly. And Northam wants a more public setting if they're going to do that. The larger legislature doesn't vote on most of these bills because they never make it out of committee.
So what exactly does he want, Ben? Background checks, a ban on assault weapons, bump stocks, high-capacity magazines. What else?
All of that and more. Yeah, a few other sort of ideas that are maybe a little more Virginia-specific. Virginia for a long time had a rule requiring limiting people to one gun a month. So basically, you could only buy one handgun per month. And in 1993, the governor, Douglas Wilder, passed a bill that would limit those to just one gun a month. So I think in 2012, the Republican governor signed a law that undid those rules. And so Northam wants to reinstate it. He says, you know, this is a rule that's helped limit gun trafficking across the Atlantic coast. Virginia's seen as sort of a source for firearms, and he thinks this is a good way to close that loophole. And there's other sort of bills related to guns in municipal buildings, obviously directly related to the shooting in Virginia Beach, which mm-hmm. happened at the municipal building there.
So Governor Northam has made headlines recently for other reasons, specifically the blackface incident years ago. I'm curious how effective he is or how effective he can be after those controversies in Virginia.
That's a great point, Jane. I think that, you know, what you're hearing from the GOP lawmakers is that this sort of special session is a political stunt. I think the Republican Speaker of the House, Kirk Cox, called it hasty and suspect when Northam first announced it. They're, of course, alluding to those scandals, the yearbook photo that emerged in February showing the governor, or a photo on his yearbook page, I should say, of someone in blackface and another one in a KKK outfit. That sparked national headlines. Then there was a subsequent revelation of sexual assault allegations against the lieutenant governor, Justin Fairfax, another Democrat. And then after that, the attorney general, another Democrat, Mark Herring, admitted that he had worn blackface in college. So this scandal, Republicans are saying, is a big distraction. It's a way to sort of divert the conversation from those scandals. And all three of those men, interestingly, were at Northam's call for this special session. So and Democrats stood alongside him. I hadn't seen anything like that recently.
So Republicans say this is a distraction. Democrats are standing by him, at least for the moment. Practically speaking, Ben, does Governor Northam have the votes to pass at least some gun control legislation?
No, I think that, you know, this is a bit of deja vu. There's not much has changed since February when the legislature let out. You know, the same people are in charge of committees. A lot of the same bills are being introduced. So, you know, it's pretty unlikely that I think opinions are going to change or that, you know, minds will be swayed. Republicans have been pretty clear that they're not on board with the measures Northam has proposed. You know, and they're not also not on board with Northam's proposal to bring these specific bills out to the full legislature to vote on. And they're in control of this process, and that's important. They dictate which bills get heard.
So lawmakers may not be on board. What's the feeling among Virginians? Are these issues resonating with people there?
Well, I think you're hearing sort of the usual range of, you know, pretty polarized opinions around around gun control. You know, there's polling that shows some of these measures are quite popular. Things like universal background checks and a ban on assault weapons, sort of vaguely phrased in polling, but poll quite well even among Republicans. But if you talk to people, I mean, I think a lot of the people on the side of gun rights are pretty adamant about their cause. I expect they'll turn out in hundreds, if not thousands, tomorrow. And likewise with the gun control advocates. I mean, they say this is long overdue in light of, you know, the 2007 Virginia Tech shooting. And the climate's changing and they're ready to act. Hmm.
So as I'm reading here, no serious gun control bills have gotten through the Virginia Assembly since 1993. What I hear you saying is not much has changed, actually, in even with these mass shootings in recent years.
No, I think, you know, over the past decade, there's been these debates. I think a lot more Democrats are on board with gun control measures than was the case in the aftermath of Virginia Tech shooting. But Republicans are still not swayed. And the backdrop for all of this is November elections this year. You know, Virginia's legislature is very, very narrowly controlled by Republicans. And, you know, Democrats are making this a bit of a campaign issue. They're saying, you know, we need to reelect new people. If Republicans aren't going to act on this, then choose us and we'll pass these we'll pass these bills next year.
Ben Pavier, thanks for the update. Really appreciate it.
Great to be here. Thanks, Jane.
Ben Pavier is politics reporter for WCVE News, Richmond's NPR station. Let me bring in now Democratic Senator John Edwards. He joins us from Roanoke, Virginia. He served in the Virginia Senate since 1996. Senator Edwards, great to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me, Jane. I appreciate it.
So after the Virginia Tech massacre in 2003, you argued against some gun control measures like universal background checks. You were the only Democratic lawmaker in Virginia's General Assembly who was endorsed by the NRA during the last election. But since then, you've sponsored some bills that would restrict gun use. You've done a little bit of a pivot. What's changed to your mind?
Well, I think it's most of the NRA has become more of an arm of the Republican Party and vice versa. And the NRA is heavily funded by the gun manufacturers who are interested in selling more guns. And I think they've kind of gone away from the gun safety aspect. When I was a kid, for example, at camp, I was taught, you know, gun safety by the NRA, how to shoot a 22, rules of safety such as there's no such thing as an unloaded gun. You never point a gun at another person. So it was all about gun safety. But I think things have changed a lot. And I think the public has changed a lot, especially since what's happened at Virginia Beach. But then before that, Parkland. Mm-hmm. It was 20 years ago in 1999 that Columbine shocked the whole country. And Virginia Tech in 2007 shocked everybody. And And I think people – and then since then, there's been increasing number of gun violence activity throughout the country and, of course, Virginia Beach, but also Pittsburgh with the synagogue shooting and, of course, up in Sandy Hook. And it has accumulated. Las Vegas, the list goes on and on. I can't even name
right,
all
exactly.
the
and so what do you make of Governor Northam's special session here? Are Virginians ready for gun laws?
I think they are. I think Virginia's changed. It's ready to have some protection. I put in a bill the last couple of years, for example, for Roanoke City to allow the localities to pass ordinances to keep guns out of local government chambers when their local government is having a session, like city council or boards of supervisors. It's only logical that localities should be able to protect themselves when they're having and not be intimidated by people bringing guns into local government sessions when they're in official session.
Mm-hmm. So you have an interesting perspective, because your perspective has changed over the years. What do you want your Republican colleagues, Senator Edwards, to understand about this Democratic push for gun control?
Well, they need to understand how the public has changed. If you look at the polls, 90% in favor of universal background checks and ways for the local governments to protect themselves. Not every local government may want to pass an ordinance to keep guns out of chambers, but many do, such as Roanoke City, because they've had specific instances where people have brought guns into city council chambers, at least on two occasions I'm aware of, and pulled, like in one case, a 9mm Glock handgun with 17 rounds in the magazine and two other magazines. And a fellow brought these and sat in the front of city council chambers when children were being honored and put it out on his lap and just to make a point. And it did intimidate some people. So to prevent that from happening, local governments, many of them, would like to have the opportunity to pass local ordinances. It would be their option, of course.
In our last 10 seconds here, what's your hope for the outcome of this special session, Senator?
Well, I hope we do something, but it's going to depend upon whether or not any Republicans, you know, we're one short in the Senate. It's now 2019 in the Senate. It's now 51-48 in the House of Delegates. So we need to have some Republicans to support something, and I think something needs to be done.
Senator Edwards, hold on for just a moment. We'll be back after this break. We're discussing tomorrow's special session of the Virginia legislature. The governor there, Governor Northam, is trying to enact new gun laws after the shooting in Virginia Beach in May that killed 12 people. Listeners, we'd love to have you join us. What are your hopes here? Tougher laws? Keep them as they are? I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. The Virginia General Assembly will take up gun policy in a special session that begins tomorrow in the wake of the Virginia Beach shooting in May that killed 12 people at a municipal building. We'd love to have you join the conversation this hour. Have you had a change of heart when it comes to gun policy? Are you holding firm? And which way? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. Here's a clip of Republican Delegate Nick Freitas delivering a speech on the floor of the Virginia House of Delegates in March of last year where he staunchly defended the Second Amendment. The speech was given just a month after the shooting at a high school in Parkland, Florida.
So if we want to have an open and honest debate, I am all for that. Let's do that. But it does start with a certain degree of mutual respect. It starts with a certain degree of not assuming that the only reason why we believe in the Second Amendment is because the NRA paid us off.
Well, in just a few minutes, we'll hear from Governor Ralph Northam. But with me now is State Senator John Edwards, a Democrat. And I'd like to bring in from Chesterfield Senator Amanda Chase. She is a Republican. Senator Chase, thanks for being with us. Nice to have you here today.
Hi, Jane. Thanks so much for the invitation.
So you've been listening to Senator John Edwards. You've heard his change of heart on the issue of guns, gun ownership, gun laws. What's your response to all that?
Well, first of all, I just say what a horrific tragedy. I think gun violence is a bipartisan issue that both sides of the aisle strongly oppose. And anytime you hear about a shooting or gun violence, there is a desire for immediate response to, quote unquote, fix, you know, this recurring nightmare that keeps targeting innocent people. The reaction of some is to eliminate all guns. And I obviously don't support that or restrict access, thinking that these restrictive laws are going to reduce the occurrence of mass shootings. However, the reality is that the bad guys, the criminals, they're the lawbreakers who break the law. And it doesn't matter how many laws you put on the books, they're still going to break the law. I mean, case in point is it's already against the law to murder, and yet murder still happens every single day. And the truth is that more restrictive laws only penalize law-abiding citizens. These laws only disarm law-abiding citizens who, in order to follow the law, they must leave their firearm locked up in a car or leave it at home. And now the unarmed law-abiding citizen is defenseless to a law-breaking gunman.
So that's interesting because you're known, Senator Chase, for wearing your own handgun on your hip. How does your experience as a gun owner shape your views on these policy issues?
Well, for me personally, as you mentioned, I am a concealed weapon permit holder, and I do conceal carry where I'm allowed to do it 24/7 as a way to defend myself. You know, unfortunately, there is evil in the world, and we don't know when it's lurking around or when it may occur. It's often in the most unexpected places. For me personally, as a woman, I feel more defenseless. You know, there people are a lot bigger than I am, not that tall. And I even remember one time I was in the Capitol, right outside Meriwether's Cafe after I just delivered, I guess, a controversial message on the floor of the Senate defending one of my positions. And I had two people to violate my personal space and try to lay hands on me. And they looked down and saw my firearm and stepped back. So to that extent, I would say that I also have personally witnessed times when having a firearm has potentially deterred, you know, some type of act or violence or that type of thing.
And so here is Governor Ralph Northam holding this special session beginning tomorrow. I presume that you do not support some of the proposals that he's putting forward. What types of policies would you like to see to prevent some of the tragedies that we've seen unfolding over and over again and right there in your backyard?
Well, first of all, I would say that I've looked at the proposals put forward by the governor, and while I appreciate the intent, none of those would have actually prevented what occurred in Virginia Beach. And once again, I always go back to any of these laws, any of these restrictions that are put forward are only going to restrict gun owners, law-abiding citizens. And so I would oppose any measure that's going to restrict or hinder the rights of law-abiding citizens. You know, murder is already against the law, but it still happens. And so, you know, I might consider something that would, that increase the penalties for people that do break the law. But I'm very concerned. I don't think we're going to get any different results. I was listening to your earlier speaker, and I think that we have already actually looked at these measures that they're putting forward. And as was mentioned earlier, the makeup of the General Assembly has basically stayed the same. And yet, you know, we're going to spend taxpayer money at the tune of $40,000 a day to have these sessions that have already been, these discussions, which we've already had earlier this year.
Many times before. John Edwards, what's your response?
Well, I think it's time to act. I think throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia, especially since Virginia Beach and even before that Parkland, things have moved dramatically. You cannot take a gun in a federal building. You can't take a gun in a courthouse. You can't take a gun in a state building under the executive order of Governor McAuliffe. But you can take a gun in a local government building. And all that I've been asking for has been to give the local governments the same authority that the state has to say, let's keep guns out of local government buildings under certain circumstances. And it's be up to the local governments as whether or not they want to do that. Nobody's interested in taking guns away from anybody. I have a district that where a lot of people hunt, and the NRA is actually fairly big in my district. And I think people need to understand I'm a Second Amendment rights person. I think most people are. And this is not taking anybody's guns away.
But what about Senator Chase's argument that none of Governor Northam's proposals, none of what he's putting forward would have prevented the evil that happened at Virginia Beach?
Well, it's really hard to tell. The individual was not supposed to have a gun because he was an employee of the city of Virginia Beach. Employees could not bring guns, but other people can bring guns into that particular building. You can argue that maybe this law or another law wouldn't have made a difference, but the fact is the localities should – this raises a bigger issue, whether or not the localities should have more authority to protect themselves in certain circumstances, and I think that we should allow them to do that if they wish.
Senator Chase, would addressing mental health issues or arming, more people, as you're saying, would that be enough?
Well, Jane, let me just speak from personal experience. Whenever I've had to enter a state building, for instance, going over to the governor's office where I was discussing with him my legislation that had passed the Senate, and I was hoping to get his support, which I eventually did, on gun legislation. Well, I always conceal carry, but what happens when I go to the governor's office? I have to figure out what I'm going to do with my gun. Do I leave it in my office? Do I lock it up in my car and hope that, keep my fingers crossed and hope that nobody steals it? Or do I have to leave it home for the day and then leave myself unprotected all day? Hmm. You know, that is a practical, real-life dilemma that I, as a woman and other people, I'm not just singling out women, but, you know, I'm just speaking from personal experience that I feel more vulnerable whenever I have to figure out a place to put my gun, whenever we have these restrictions placed on these municipal buildings, state agencies, et cetera. It creates a real dilemma for people who truly do conceal carry.
Let me get a caller in here from Newton, Massachusetts. James is on the line. Hi, James. Welcome to On Point.
Yes. Sometimes these statistics are misleading because you fail to mention that two-thirds of all the gun shootings or fatalities are by suicide. And those are often overlooked. And although you have these mass shootings, the real problem, like in Parkland, there already were laws on the books, but the federal, state, and local governments, including the school department, totally failed on enforcement and what there already was to catch the culprit in that case, and in other cases, too. So you do have mass shootings now and then. But statistically, to die from gunshot is way, way down. It's not up. And the politicians make a big issue out of it, but the chances of being shot by a gun and killed are fairly, very low compared to other things.
James, thank you. I'm going to get Matt in here from Eustis, Florida, for his perspective. Hi, Matt. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I'm also a pilot and a gun owner, but I'm also a dad, you know, and things like Sandy Hook really hit me hard. So I've thought a lot about it, and looking at both sides, I think I've got a solution, and that is that we do license gun owners. We treat gun ownership as a qualified right that nobody is born to know how to do properly until they're taught, and in the teaching and training, then you get vetting. And it's different in other countries. There are other countries where people own guns and they don't have the kind of mentality that we have.
More of an education piece to your mind, Matt. Thank you. And one more here, Brian in Montgomery, Alabama. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay. I just want to say that I feel like if guns is kind of, how can I say? I'm sorry I lost my thought. But,
that's okay. Brian, I'm going to put you on hold because I have Governor Ralph Northam on the line. We'll get back to you after the break. Brian, thank you for calling. Governor Ralph Northam is with me. Nice to have you, Governor. Thanks for being here.
Hello, Jane. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, I have a few questions for you. I know your time is short, but I want to ask you first, after the Virginia Beach shooting that killed 12 people, you said you would be asking for votes and laws, not thoughts and prayers, that we have to give Virginians the action they deserve. What changed for you after that shooting in May? What created your desire for action?
Well, you know, Jane, we have watched tragedy after tragedy in this country. And, you know, when this happened in Virginia Beach, right in our backyard, and as you say, we lost 12 precious lives. They showed up for work, you know, on that Friday morning, working for the city of Virginia Beach, expecting to go home at 5 o'clock to be with their families and start their weekends. And that didn't happen. And that left a tremendous void in our community and in their families. And it just, you know, enough is enough. And, you know, in addition to that tragedy, you know, if you look at the larger picture in Virginia, in 2018, we lost 1,035 lives to guns, and that's about three a day. And, you know, I think that Virginians have spoken. They said that we need common sense gun legislation in Virginia. It's become, in my mind and a lot of other people's minds, an emergency. And so that's why I have asked the legislature to come back tomorrow. And I'm looking for, Jane, to having these pieces of legislation heard. I think a discussion needs to ensue. And then I would really like all of our legislators to take a vote on these pieces of legislation. That's what Virginians deserve. That's why they voted, to have these people represent them. And so I am confident that if they're allowed to take that vote on the floor of the Senate and the floor of the House, that these common sense pieces of legislation will become law in Virginia, and at the end of the day, we'll save lives.
You know, there are many who suggest that by calling this special session, you're just playing politics here, Governor, that you're pandering for votes in a high-stakes political season. There are many who say, including on this program, that none of the bills you've discussed or put forward would have made a difference in Virginia Beach at the shooting in May. That gunman carried two legally purchased handguns. Police did recover a high-capacity magazine and a silencer from the scene, but banning those devices, many say, would not have kept that killer from committing his crimes. What's your response to some of that, Governor?
I disagree with that, Jane. And, you know, a couple points I would make. There's a reason that the assailant used a suppressor, and that is to be able to kill as many people as he could without, you know, people really understanding what was going on inside of that building. And as has been described, they thought, some of the individuals that were in the building thought that they heard a nail gun. There's a big difference between how you respond to a nail gun and a .45 caliber sidearm with an exaggerated clip holding a tremendous amount of rounds. So number one, banning silencers, also called suppressors, would have saved lives. We also should let the localities determine their regulations to ban guns from municipality buildings, from parks, et cetera. So, you know, part of our legislation is to do that. Mm-hmm. It's also another piece of our legislation is to ban what I really refer to as weapons of war, but magazines that hold more than 10 rounds. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of what we're doing would have saved lives. And more importantly, or as importantly, is that when I mentioned earlier, 1,035 lives were lost in Virginia last year. So these are common sense pieces of legislation, red flag laws, keeping guns away from minors. As a child neurologist, you know, I have seen so many toddlers that pick up loaded firearms on the gun side, on the bedside tables, and the rest of that story is predictable. So these are common sense pieces of legislation, and this is what Virginians are asking for. At the end of the day, we need to make Virginia a safer place for our citizens, whether it be in places of worship, whether it be at the malls, wherever. And this is something that has become an emergency in Virginia.
Mm-hmm. You know, many have tried before, including in your own state, and I'm hearing those who say you just don't have the votes for this, Governor.
Well, you know what? If these pieces of legislation are put on the floor of the Senate and the House, I have seen this happen before. I'm confident that we will have the vote. So I have asked our leadership in Virginia to allow them to be heard, discussed, and at the end of the day, voted on by all the legislators. And I'm confident that Virginia will be safer as a result.
We just heard earlier from two Virginia state senators with very divergent views on this. from your personal perspective as a former military physician, what do you want those legislators to know? What do you want the public to know about your stand, your shift, your views on gun laws?
Well, the public needs to know that, yes, I did serve in the United States Army as a physician. I took care of wounded soldiers during Desert Storm. I'm a child neurologist. I've taken care of toddlers that have been the victims of gun violence. I have taken care of certainly women that have been the victims of domestic violence. And so my background does provide a perspective on gun violence. But let me just sum all of this up and say that I attended a funeral a couple of weeks ago of a 9-year-old precious little girl who was out playing in a park here in Richmond with her friends, and gunfire erupted, and she was a victim of that. She died, and her father, Jane, stood up at the funeral and talked about how precious she was, and then finally made the point that we shouldn't be having this discussion. We shouldn't be sitting in a church burying his 9-year-old daughter. Enough is enough. And you know what? Legislators can sit by idle. They can come up with all the excuses they want. But Virginians, they want common sense gun legislation. As a leader, as the governor of Virginia, that's what I'm calling for.
Governor Ralph Northam, good luck tomorrow with your special session. Thank you for your time today, sir.
Thank you so much, Jane.
Thank you. And Virginia State Senator Amanda Chase, Republican, who joined us from Richmond as well. Amanda Chase, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
And John Edwards, Democratic State Senator, representing Virginia's 21st District there in Roanoke. John, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Up next, we will continue talking about state and federal gun policies and who wants to make the changes. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about state and federal gun policies this hour and who wants to make changes. You can join the conversation. What conversations are happening in your community about guns? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Richmond, Virginia is William Pelfrey. He's the chair of the Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness Program at Virginia Commonwealth University's L. Douglas Wilder School of Government and Public Affairs. He's a criminologist who researches gun crime and policy. Will Pelfrey, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about these exciting issues.
Well, you just heard Governor Northam. I'm curious your reaction to what he had to say.
I think Governor Northam has some great ideas, and it'll be really interesting to see how the special session progresses. As one of my colleagues said, a special session is kind of the Wild West of politics. Anything can happen. There are narrow majorities in both the House and Senate, and it would only take one or two people crossing the lines for a bill or perhaps one of these pieces of proposed legislation to pass.
You know, it seems after each of these mass shootings, there is outrage and then protests and vigils and talk, a lot of talk of action, but then it always seems to fade. I wonder how you view this issue in terms of protecting rights on both sides.
I think it's a bold move to put the special session relatively close to the tragedy of Virginia Beach. Historically, these moves have taken months, and hopefully Governor Northam can secure what he's pursuing, an open discussion, some votes, and 140 people are up for election in November, just 5 short months away. So Governor Northam is particularly interested in getting people's perspectives on the record. And that will then catalyze voters, perhaps enhance fundraising, and push some people towards attention to these difficult issues.
You know, to your point, one of our listeners writes, it takes a month after people are killed in Virginia for them to talk about gun control. It took New Zealand a day to reform their gun control and protect their people. It's been a year and a half since Stoneham Douglas and 7 years since Sandy Hook and dozens of others with no real reform or gun control. I'm curious, Will Pelfrey, how do you view gun policy? Do you see it more as a federal or a state issue?
It's both. The federal government has set a series of laws, and states cannot have laws that are less restrictive than the federal government. The states can have laws that are more restrictive, and some states do. There are assault weapon laws in some states that preclude the purchase of what we think of as assault weapons, and there are other states that, well, they allow those. And there are some states that restrict purchases of automatic firearms, and other states that have more liberal policies that tend to favor gun rights.
So, for example, there are federal laws around, military-style weapons, bazookas or machine guns mounted on tanks. And on a state level, there's a more independent amount of discretion. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. There are a number of states that have precluded what we think of as assault-style weapons, the AR-15, M-16s, M-5s. And those weapons are easily converted or sometimes machined to be extremely dangerous. Prior to the assault weapon ban in 1996, there were not that many assault weapons, perhaps 100,000 in the United States. After the ban expired in 2004, the number of assault weapons in the United States exploded. People wanted those guns that had previously been banned. And then when President Obama was elected in 2008, those sales exploded again. So now there are some 15 to 20 million assault-style weapons, AR-15-style weapons, that accept those high-capacity magazines. Those are the weapons that are particularly dangerous.
Virginia actually relaxed gun control following the school shooting at Virginia Tech in 2004. Remind us what happened back then.
So in 2007, Sung Hyu Choi decided to pursue the unfortunate goal or objective of killing as many people as he could in a short amount of time. He killed 32 people with two handguns that he purchased legally. And unfortunately, he should not have been allowed to purchase those handguns. He had a history of mental illness, but somehow was able to circumvent existing policy. And subsequent to that incident, Virginia's legislators decided to enhance the mental health screening process associated with buying guns. And lots of other states have followed suit. Unfortunately, it's still not sufficient. It's not that hard for somebody who wants to buy a gun to do so. Adam Lanza, the Newtown Sandy Hook shooter, was able to secure guns that his mother purchased. Nicholas Cruz, the Parkland shooter at Marjorie Stone Douglas High School, he was able to acquire guns, even though he clearly should not have, with a history of mental illness. He had been described to law enforcement as a school shooter in the making, and he went out and got an assault-style weapon and was able to kill an extraordinary number of people in a short time.
You've researched, Professor, the potential impact of gun legislation, including a proposal to arm teachers. I'm curious, what did you find?
This is a really interesting topic, and it's something that everybody can relate to. It's inherently engaging because most people have many people have kids in schools and everybody has been to school. And when we think about the risks associated with arming teachers, there are a number of things that really stand out. The idea of a teacher with a gun is based on this protective idea that having a gun present will provide some protection. And the research suggests that it's really a fallacy. Having a gun on the scene is only likely to enhance violence rather than diminish the chances of violence. So when a teacher has a gun, there are any number of fairly obvious risks, like the teacher using the gun against a student, the teacher being mistaken by law enforcement as the active shooter and then being shot. And there are some other less obvious ideas, like the psychological repercussions of students knowing that there's a gun on campus and the reason why a gun is present. I'm particularly concerned about which people would have those guns. When you think about the teachers you had in school, Jane, there were some that really stood out that influenced what you chose to do. I can remember my American literature teacher, Mr. Ricketts, my geometry teacher, Ms. Wilhoit. They were wonderful people, and they would be the least likely to want the guns. And I can also remember my shop teacher who had cut off a couple of fingers in a construction accident, and he would be the first in line to get a gun. And he's probably the least well, the person that I would least want to have a gun in an active shooter incident. Hmm. So we have to be concerned about who's going to have those guns and how they're going to access them and the kinds of risks that they carry in a school.
I got a lot of calls here. A lot of listeners want to get in. Let's go to Sam in East Greenwich, Rhode Island. Hi, Sam. Welcome to On Point.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm originally from Virginia, born in Virginia. My mother was a Lee. Richard Henry Lee is my four-great-grandfather. He and his brother signed the Declaration of Independence. Vault forward to the 20th century. I got my first gun when I was 10 years old, a single-shot 22. I was a I got my Eagle Scout badge. I got you know, I was a marksman in the Boy Scouts. Mm-hmm. My father was an NRA champion shooter back in the 30s when the NRA cared about safety. The NRA is contemptible. There are two key words in the Second Amendment. We can argue about whether we're talking about individuals or militia, but the two key words are well-regulated. What we have right now is so far from good regulation. By the way, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, they are federal documents. And so these rules, these laws ought to be federal. They ought not to be state by state. You know, New Zealand has just made a mockery of our whole system here. You know, the NRA is a wholly owned subsidiary of the GOP, which is a wholly owned subsidiary now of Trump Industries.
Sam, thank you very much. Professor Pelfrey, jump in here. What do you make of Sam's point, especially about this well-regulated section wording in the Second Amendment?
There are a number of federal laws and Supreme Court decisions that influence what we do and gun rights, gun control. The 2008 Supreme Court decision, Washington, D.C. versus Heller, indicated that there is some reasonable regulation on guns. And Justice Antonin Scalia wrote the majority opinion, and he noted that guns in regular usage should not be regulated. So people who have a handgun, people have a shotgun, people have a bolt-action rifle. But that has been interpreted to guns that are not in regular usage, such as an assault-style weapon. Even though there are lots of assault-style weapons out there in the world or in the United States, perhaps 15 to 20 million, that represents only about 3% of all the guns. You have to remember that in the United States, there are more guns than people. We have about 330 to 340 million people in the United States, but about 400 million guns in civilian hands. That's about 40% of all the guns in the world, just in the United States, in civilian hands. Hmm. By contrast, the U.S. military has about 4.4 million guns, so about 1% of all the guns in the United States. Hmm. So it's reasonable to regulate guns in some ways. People with serious mental illness, people who are convicted felons, people who should not have guns can be restricted from having guns by state laws. And one of the pieces of legislation that Governor Northam has proposed is the Extreme Risk Protective Order. And those are sometimes called red flag laws. And those laws would allow police to take guns from people who represent a clear threat to themselves or others.
Let me get Austin here from Dubuque, Iowa. Hi, Austin. You're on Point. Welcome.
Hello. Just wanted to give a little of my background here. I was actually raised to be very much anti-weapon, anti-firearm. And then around my late teen years, my uncle taught me how to shoot and started to educate me. And I went a couple of years kind of as a fence rider. And then now I'm actually a daily carrier. And I just wanted to share a little bit of the logic to that.
Okay.
So when he first brought me out and taught me how to shoot, I couldn't hit the broadside of the barn from 10 paces. And so the amount of time that it has taken me to be an accurate shot, to be able to use anything with any sort of decency, has been worlds. And I feel like if there are these mass incidents, there are other ways to go about it. I mean, we drive a vehicle every day that could be much more dangerous. And also the second point that has really changed my mind on everything is just the amount of unregulated, unknown firearms out there. If we all want to turn in our semi-automatic rifles or whatnot, the criminals won't. So like if a genie were to come to my door tomorrow and say we can take care of everything in America, I would say absolutely do it. But until we can magic away all of the firearms from danger, semi-automatic firearms from dangerous criminals.
Only criminals.
I don't feel comfortable giving. Yeah, until we can get it away from everyone else, I don't feel comfortable giving them.
Thank you, Austin, very much. I appreciate the call. Will Pelfrey, I'm curious what public view of gun control, how it's changed or shifted over the years.
Jane, I'm fortunate to work at Virginia Commonwealth University. And in my school, the Wilder School, we have a Center for Public Policy public opinion poll that we do two or three times a year. And the public opinion poll has tapped. It's much like the Gallup poll or the Harris poll. And we ask questions about gun attitudes towards towards safety and homeland security. And overwhelmingly, gun control is a proxy for political affiliation. If you're a Republican, you tend to prefer guns be made available, widely available. If you're a Democrat, you tend to restrict. You want to see guns restricted. There are some areas where ideas supersede political party. Safety in schools is one of those. And people are willing to pay higher taxes to enhance safety in schools. Now, that does not include guns in schools. It usually includes target hardening measures like safer doors, lockdown mechanisms, access control. But public opinion around guns has not changed that much. And it's probably in pretty locked position. Despite the number of mass shootings that seem to happen with some regularity, public opinion doesn't change very much, except on some narrow dimensions like school safety.
Don in Wilmington, North Carolina, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
I think people are sort of avoiding the main issue here, and it has to do with mental health and the shooters and their state of mental health at the time that they commit the crime. And that is a difficult thing to correct or fix. And so people are trying to take the easy way out. But I think everybody would agree that no one sane would go in and murder 10 innocent people or 20 innocent students. So I think we have to sort of include mental health as being one of the number one priorities.
Don, thank you. Will Pelfrey, it's the people, not the guns.
Well, that's a trite saying, and that's a defense that has been used for a long time. It is the guns. And when we look at the proliferation of assault-style weapons, we see that the number of mass shootings and the dangerousness associated with those mass shootings have gone up. So restricting access to guns, especially around issues of mental health and sometimes situational illness, mental illness, that makes a lot of sense. And that's why the red flag laws that have been passed in 15 states plus Washington, D.C. have potential. And it'll be very interesting to see if Virginia can take steps towards that, keeping hands out of guns of, well, people who are experiencing a short-term or even a long-term mental crisis makes sense. And I think that goes to what Don was saying about careful and reasonable regulation of who has a gun at any given moment.
So the special session of the Virginia General Assembly begins tomorrow. What lessons does Virginia hold for the rest of the country, Will?
Virginia has the dubious distinction of a couple of really dark moments, the Virginia Tech shooting, the recent Virginia Beach shooting, but there are also some bright spots. There are some wonderful programs of violence reduction that are going on in Virginia right now. Project Exile was founded in Virginia, and there's an analog in Boston, Operation Ceasefire, and those have served as the basis of Project Safe Neighborhood, which is all across the U.S. and works very hard to reduce violence in certain communities. Virginia also has a outstanding Center for School and Campus Safety in the Department of Criminal Justice Services. And that program is based on educating and training teachers and law enforcement school resource officers on identifying potential threats in schools. We have a wonderful threat assessment program where teachers and law enforcement officers and counselors work together to identify students that are potential problems and intercede before they become violent. And I hope that those programs can expand across the United States. Those threat assessment programs in schools can even be extrapolated to workplaces. Somebody like Dwayne Craddock, the Virginia Beach shooter, could possibly have been prevented with a successful threat assessment program that would, well, identify and intercede before something tragic happens.
Professor William Pelfrey is chair of the Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness Program at Virginia Commonwealth University's Wilder School of Government and Public Affairs. Professor Pelfrey, really appreciate your perspective and helping us understand this complex issue. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Jane. This has been a great experience.
Thank you. And listeners, thanks to you. You can continue the conversation and get our On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.